Okay, thank you very much for the invitation. It's great to be here. So let me start with a description of a model that probably you heard about. That would be a model for coagulation and fragmentation. And we would like to understand the following phenomenon. Imagine that you have a cluster of particles, and then each cluster is going to move like a Brownian motion. So these are clusters moving like Brownian motion. And two things may happen. One is that when clusters are going to meet, maybe after some overlap, they start to interact, and from this you are going to produce a larger cluster. So that would be coagulation. Or the other possibility is that you have a large cluster, and at some point, because of certain circumstances, it's going to fragment into smaller pieces. So that would be the fragmentation. And we would like to have a simple mathematical model for this, and the hope is that you can derive some macroscopic equation for the density of clusters of given size. So let me come up with a mathematical model for this. First, I'm going to think of each cluster something small, and perhaps I can locate its center. So I'm going to write xi for a center of a cluster. So xi with I in some index set, that would represent the center of the clusters. And somehow I think of each cluster being kind of like the sum of smaller things, and then I'm going to associate a number ni, and in some sense this represents the cluster size, but ni, perhaps the real size is ni times some small number. So because of that, ni can be chosen, for example, an integer. And if ni is 10, means that I have 10 pieces of those smaller things. So ni would be the cluster size. And there are two possibilities. Some people studied the case when ni is just an integer, positive integer. Or the other possibility is that each ni is a positive number. Both are considered in the literature. And each xi moves as a Brownian motion with a diffusion rate that is going to depend on the size of the cluster. So the rate would be a function of size, so that's one thing that is going to happen. And the other thing is that when xi and xj, for example, are sufficiently close, then you are going to replace this with one cluster size, so you have to replace these two positions with one new position, and there are some possibilities for choosing the new position, but the important thing is that only one cluster survives. You replace two clusters with one cluster, and the size of the new cluster is going to be ni plus nj. So then xi, xj are replaced with xij, a new position, and ni, nj are replaced with ni plus nj. And a similar description would be given for the fragmentation part, and I'm not going to bother with it. But there are two possibilities for xij. One is that you choose the center of mass. That would be one possibility for choosing the new location. The other possibility is that for the microscopic model, you're going to kill one of them and leave the other one surviving, and that would happen, for example, the survival rate of xi would be ni divided by ni plus nj. So one possibility would be this. No, it's not the same, but I can define. Exactly. So at some point, you're going to replace it with two things with some probability. There would be a similar definition. But it turns out that mathematically, coagulation is the harder part, so later I'm going to draw fragmentation from the model and just concentrate on coagulation. That's why I didn't bother with the details of the definition. And for example, xij, one possibility is that xij is ni xi nj xj divided by ni plus nj, or the other possibility is that you set this to be xi with probability ni divided by ni plus nj, and you set this guy to be xj with the probability that equals to nj divided by ni plus nj. Okay, so this would be the model. But now I have to tell you, what do I mean by xi and xj being close? One simple way of doing this is by introducing a coagulation rate. And I also want to say that this phenomenon should happen with a rate that is going to depend on the cluster sizes. So the coagulation will happen with a rate that is of this four. First, I'm going to put alpha and I and j, and I'm going to think of this as the coagulation rate. So the rate is given to us. The other thing is that I'm going to put some v epsilon xi minus xj, and the job of this guy is saying that when two particles xi and xj are close, then the coagulation is going to happen. And one convenient way of defining this would be taking v epsilon of z to be something that I have to explain it. So it's going to be of this form, with v a function that is non-negative, its total integral is 1, and v is of compact support. So I have to explain why I'm scaling things in this way. Epsilon would be a small parameter. So let me explain this part. Since v is of compact support, this would be non-zero if z minus epsilon is of order 1. That would make z of order epsilon. And what it really means is that the coagulation would happen if xi minus xj is of order epsilon. And epsilon is a small number, so coagulation is happening when xi and xj are close. Okay? So that would explain this part. And how about this part? I want to make sure that the coagulation rate is of order 1. It's not something small. It's kind of positive. And since xi and xj are moving as Brownian motions, then xi minus xj is also moving as a Brownian motion. Yeah. Okay, so the dimension is 2 or more. So if xi is in Rd, and d is 2 or more. Okay, so it's greater than 3. I'm sorry. Otherwise, you have to change this. And the reason for this is that when xi minus xj is like a Brownian motion, and then the coagulation would happen if this Brownian motion enters the support of this v epsilon, which is a ball of radius epsilon, and for Brownian motion, take the time of order epsilon squared to leave that support. And since this is going to be calculated over that interval for which the Brownian is in the support, so the time that this is going to take is going to affect the coagulation would be something of order epsilon squared. So if I want to make sure that something non-vanishing is happening, I have to multiply by epsilon minus 2. Okay? This is like approximating a delta-type function that is living on the boundary of that ball. is, yeah, that's why Brownian motion is two-dimensional. Exactly. Okay, so this would be the model. The dimension is two or more. Similar thing can be formulated, but then the scaling should be different in dimension two. Okay, and the problem would be harder. So this is the model, and let me tell you what kind of theorem we would like to prove. We would like to derive a macroscopic equation for the density of clusters of a given size. And now I'm ready to state a theorem. This is a joint work with Alan Hammond. And it goes like this. Under the suitable conditions that I'm going to state later, and if we assume that initially, so suppose at time t equals 0, these cluster centers are distributed in such a way that I have some definite density for particles for clusters of given size. And one way of stating this is that I, j, xi, so that would be the position at time t equals 0. And this is the size at time t equals 0. Let's look at the sum of this sort. And somehow I want to divide this by total number of particles. For now, I'm going to put n here, but then I have to explain what's the relationship between n and epsilon, because I want to and model a certain phenomenon. But imagine that initially this will converge to an expression of this sort. So I guess if I want to formulate it this way, then I have to assume that each ni is a positive integer. Okay, so suppose initially I have a situation like this. What it really means is that this represents the macroscopic density of particles of given cluster size n. Because, for example, if you choose j to be the indicator function of having the size n and being in a set A, this basically counts the number of particles that are in that set and have that cluster size, and then you renormalize it, and you're assuming that that can be approximated by an expression like this. So this would represent the density. So I'm assuming certain conditions that I explain later on alpha. And I assume that initially you have this. Then we would like to say that at later times the same thing happens. With F solving the Smoluchowski equation. Before I describe this equation, let me tell you what is the relationship between N and epsilon. N, in some sense, is the average number of clusters. Here, N is nothing other than, for example, epsilon 2 minus t. Okay, so let me explain this. And this, so what's the philosophy behind this? This is chosen to to have a kinetic situation. And what do I mean by a kinetic situation? A kinetic situation means a scenario in which a particle would coagulate in average with finitely many other clusters in one unit of time. This means that in average a particle would interact with finitely many other particles in one unit of time. In one unit of time. And let me explain that why this should be the relationship to guarantee this. So you have this Brownian particle that is moving in space, and then on its way it has a chance to interact with other particles, and a particle would interact with this guy if it's sufficiently close to it because of this term. And because of that, an interaction would happen if some particle can be found in an epsilon neighborhood of the trajectory of this typical Brownian particle. So take an epsilon neighborhood of this. So this would be set of y such that y is y minus bt is say less than epsilon for some t between 0 and 1 with this being a Brownian motion. So take a Brownian motion and take epsilon neighborhood of a Brownian motion. This set is known as a Wiener sausage, so take a Wiener sausage and ask yourself what is the volume of such a sausage. The volume would give you an idea about the number of other particles I may interact with, and it's known that, so let's have a name for this, let me call this A, and it's known that the volume of A is roughly as epsilon goes to zero is roughly well, of course, here by convergence I mean when epsilon goes to zero. Okay? When epsilon goes to zero, this is going to be roughly something of order epsilon v minus 2 times a number, and that number turns out to be the Newtonian potential of a unit ball is a number C, where C is the capacity of the unit ball. This is the Newtonian capacity. I think in dimension 3 is like something like 4 pi, but something that you can calculate explicitly. Yes. Yeah, I mean, the picture is not that nice for Brownian trajectory. It doesn't look like that.
So that you get large volume by non-path.
No, this would be a tip. Why? I mean, the typical path would be relevant here. So typically, you have to think of xi minus xj. That's like a Brownian motion. I mean, just look at xi. Just follow one of them. Just move like a Brownian motion. But dimension, right, that's, right, true, But still, this asymptotic is correct for small epsilon. Exactly. Right. But the important thing is this constant later that is going to appear in this equation, this Malyushevsky equation that I haven't written it down yet. So this constant is relevant. The scaling, you're right. I mean, Brownian scaling would dictate this power here. I mean, and right. No, typical path. It turns out that that would be the case here. Yes, exactly. Okay. I don't know why atypical path that is going to occur with a small probability by large deviations would be relevant here. We can discuss this later, but so this would say that the volume is of this order by scaling, and since if I have n particles, then, and if things are scattered evenly, so the number of particles that a typical cluster is going to encounter would be more or less n times the volume. Then number of particles of clusters encountered is typically n times epsilon d minus 2 times c. So to have this of order 1, we need to assume that n epsilon d minus 2 is more or less a number z that is neither 0 nor infinity. Okay? So that would explain this relationship that I have assumed. The relationship between n and epsilon is chosen in such a way that a typical particle, a typical cluster, would encounter finitely many other clusters. And that would be responsible for a kinetic behavior. And now is the time to say something about the S-Modulchowski equation. So I can calculate the macroscopic density by solving this PDE, and the equation is this. Remember that we have a function f that depends on the position, cluster size, and time. And I want to give you an equation for the evolution of f in x and n. And there are going to be several parts. One part is going to represent the fact that each particle is diffusing, and that is given by diffusion. The other part has to do with the fact that when a coagulation happens, then when a coagulation happens between two particles, one of size n, the other one of size m, then you're losing particles of those sizes and you gain a particle of size n plus m. For example, you're going to lose whenever a particle of size n would meet a particle of size m. So for every m with a suitable rate that I denoted by alpha hat, create more space for myself, so it would be plus something and minus something, and the loss term would look like this. Okay, so particle of size n can meet the particle of size m, then that's responsible for the loss. And for suitable alpha hat, that is not exactly alpha. I have to tell you how alpha hat is calculated, and has to do with that capacity calculation that I mentioned in that heuristic picture. And there is also a gain term, and the gain term would be when two particles of size p and q coagulate and create something of size n. So it's going to be alpha hat PQ FX PT FX QT where the summation is when P plus Q is exactly n. Okay, so this is the PD we expect to derive. I guess there's 1/2 I have to put here. And there's 1/2 here because I'm taking a Brownian motion with that diffusion. Okay, so, but now I have to tell you what is alpha hat. So microscopically, you started with this coagulation rate, but macroscopically, you are going to have a new coagulation rate. And I have to give you a recipe for calculating this alpha hat. Going to happen in two steps. First, solve this PDE. So you give me NM and this number alpha NM, and also I have the diffusion. These two particles, remember, are two Brownian motions. One of them has diffusion coefficient dN, the other one dm. These are the relevant parameters in the calculation. So first you solve this PDE. Find a function ux that solves this equation. Dn plus dm divided by 2 Laplacian of u of x equals to this function v that appears here times 1 plus ux times alpha. Okay, so this is a constant to solve this PDE, and this PDE has a trivial solution. If u is exactly negative 1, then the right hand side vanishes and this side vanishes, but this is not the solution you are after. It turns out that there is a unique solution for which this limit is 0. So there is a unique solution that decays at infinity. So find such a solution. After finding that solution, then you can calculate alpha hat by the following formula. Then, alpha hat nm is nothing other than the total integral of this side. Note that if it were not for this function u, then the total integral of v would be 1, then you get just alpha. So you have to make some corrections. And that correction is given by a solution of this elliptic equation. It turns out that u is always between negative 1 and 0. And also, one can show, after doing all these calculations, doing some potential theory, it turns out that alpha hat nm is always less than dn plus dm times the capacity of the support of v. Okay. So this alpha we started with could be very large. But when you go to the effective coagulation rate macroscopically, you always have this bound. It does. So you give me this number alpha, which is alpha n and m, and you give me all these dn and dm, then this happens. So perhaps I should say a little bit about the role of alpha hat and how these things are going to play a role here. Let me make some remarks here. First, why this guy shows up in here? Well, the reason is that when a coagulation happens, you have one diffusion with rate dn and another diffusion with rate dm, but it's the relative distance that is going to play a role. And the relative distance is, again, a Brownian motion, and the rate of this new Brownian motion is dn plus dm. So remark here that the diffusion rate of xi minus xj is indeed dni plus dmi. And let me make another remark, and the other remark is that imagine that in the problem I'm going to multiply alpha nm by a large factor lambda, and suppose this lambda goes to infinity. This is the first remark. The other second remark is that imagine that I replace alpha nm with lambda times alpha nm for lambda large. Larger lambda you choose, then the coagulating particles would coagulate faster. In other words, as soon as they enter the support of V, then the rate is very large, then immediately they coagulate. And if you think about it, when lambda goes to infinity, it's as if the coagulation would happen when xi minus xj is exactly epsilon. They're not going to have a chance to kind of like fool around and wait for the opportunity to coagulate. So in some sense, when lambda goes to infinity, we have a hardcore situation, namely xi and xj coagulate as soon as xi minus xj enters the set K, the support. So as soon as they enter, they coagulate immediately. Now, the corresponding coefficient, if we denote the corresponding coagulation rate, by alpha hat lambda nm, okay, so multiply by this big factor lambda and denote the coagulation rate by alpha hat sub lambda of nm, then alpha hat lambda nm will converge to, as lambda goes to infinity, will converge to this factor, will converge to dn plus dm times the capacity of the set K. In other words, in this extreme case, you're going to have a PDE with alpha hat that is independent of N and M. Okay, so that would explain all these bounds that is happening here. And in other words, what I have here corresponds to the hard core case, when particles, as soon as enter the support of K, they coagulate immediately. Am I? Oh, I see. So I just had time to state the theorem. Okay, that's good enough. I stop now.